Hello, fellow foodies. Thanks so much for tuning in. During this difficult period of social distancing and isolation from the COVID-19 pandemic, many of you may be spending a lot of time at home pondering what to do with your food stores. Perhaps you're worried about how to make your pantry supplies stretch into more meals, or maybe you're even looking for ideas on how to reduce your food waste. In this episode of Foodie Pharmacology, I chat with Dr. Julia Skinner, who happens to be an expert on this very subject. She shares some fascinating tips on how to turn your kitchen scraps into delightful foodie treasures, and we're talking apple cores and carrot tops, plus much more. Julia is the founder of Root, an Atlanta-based food history and fermentation organization. She is also a food writer and fermentation expert and has been featured in Fermentation Magazine, Savour, Bon Appetit, Business Insider, and more. Her next book, Culture Begins Here, Fermentation and the History of How We Eat, will be published by Story in 2021. For coming on the show. I am a big fan of your work and loved taking the fermentation workshop with you and other teachers, I guess, a month or two ago. And I know that you've got a lot of really great tips for people, and I thought it might be fun to highlight some of those.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here. I'm a big fan of this this podcast and your work in general as well. So.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, why don't we start with just some of the basics? How do people get by with what they have on hand right now? Right now, we're kind of, a lot of people are in social isolation because of the coronavirus, and they're probably looking at their pantry puzzling, okay, what do I do with this? How do I use this cabbage? What do I do with these carrots before they go bad, or these apples? What are some of your big tips that you provide your students with?
So one of the big things when I'm teaching people, because I think when we look at, say, an apple or a carrot or something, we look at the part we're used to eating and we kind of just discard the rest. So, you know, peels, carrot tops, you know, whatever. I like to think of each fruit or vegetable as, you know, as a whole thing. Like, think of each part of it and how that can be used. So, for example, today, I read something from Jacques Pepin, who's, you know, one of my favorite chefs, who would take apple peels and he would roast them in the oven and use them as tea, or dry them and use them as tea, you know, things like that. I'll take apple peels and I'll use them as tea, or I'll dry them and powder them and use them as a seasoning. But, you know, you don't even have to get that fancy. You can just eat, you know, eat your apples with the peels on them.
That's great.
things like that, getting creative with leftovers, like not seeing leftovers as being this burden that, like, oh God, now I have to eat, you know, roasted vegetables again. It's like, okay, well, you know, put them in a blender with some stock and make soup, and there you go. Now it's a different thing.
Yeah. Why don't we start with your idea around vegetable stock? You call it scrappy soup stock. Yeah. How do you make that?
So basically you take, you know, if you're making a bunch of vegetables at once, you can just kind of take all the scraps from that. I mean, this is like onion skins and like the tops of onions you cut off. And like if you press garlic in a garlic press and you've got those little peels with some of the garlic stuck to them, the tops of carrots, your celery tops, your whatever you have. And if you have a bunch of it, you can just throw it in a crock pot, add some water, or throw it in a pot on the stove and just let it go for, you know, a few hours until it's really nice and flavorful. If you're like me and you're not feeding a ton of people, so you're not making a lot of this stuff, you know, and in bulk, you can take the little scraps that you have and you can put them in the freezer and freeze them. And then as you have enough to make stock, then you can pull it back out, pull those scraps out and make it all at once. One note about freezing things though, is if you're going to freeze, say, chunks of vegetables or things like that, you'll want to, freeze them in a single layer on a baking sheet or something similar, and then put them in whatever container. And that makes it so that you don't have, the water from those things as they're freezing, they're not sticking together into one chunk, but then they're also less likely to get freezer burn because they're not like this big wet mass of stuff in, you know, in a bag or a jar.
That's really great advice. I hadn't thought about that. Well, going back to apples too, and this is something I haven't tried yet, but I would really love to, is making my own apple vinegar.
Yeah.
So my kids love apples, and I've got, you know, a lot of apple cores that are just going into the trash. And how do you make apple vinegar from just the scraps from apples?
So it's really, really easy. And it's actually the first vinegar I ever made, because I also love apples, and I would have, you know, in apple season, I would make pounds and pounds of applesauce and whatever. And then it'd be like, God, I have like 50 apple cores. Like, but I need to do something with these. and so you just basically take them, you pack them in a jar, you know, as tight as you can. You know, you don't have to get too crazy, but you don't want to just have like one apple core in your jar. And then I usually will add a bit of sugar. Sometimes, like the most recent batch I made, I didn't, because the apples were like so juicy and sweet. But usually you will want to add sugar. And the reason you're doing that is that vinegar is a two-step fermentation process. Step one is fermenting it into alcohol. And so you'll have yeast, Saccharomyces cerevisiae, which is, you know, brewing yeast, but is also a wild yeast that exists around in the world, will eat some of the starches in there, some of those sugars, and they will break that down into alcohol. And then you have vinegar is acetic acid, and so you have acetobacter, which are the bacteria that then consume the alcohol and turn it into vinegar. So basically, when you make it, you're just trying to facilitate those two processes. So you're adding sugar so that the alcohol can be made, and then you are adding, you know, just letting it continue to sit, basically. Like if you've ever had a bottle of wine that you've left out on the counter too long and it turned into...
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just basically that. Like you the first week, so kind of as, you know, step by step, basically what you do is you put your apple cores in a jar, you add your sugar, you add some water.
Do you need to add yeast, or is it already on the apples or in the environment and just kind of kicks it on its own?
Yes, yeah, so wild fermentation is nice because all of the microbes that we use for that are on like all surfaces all the time, right? Like they're
nice.
Already fruits and vegetables, they're already all over the place, they're in the air.
I love the sound of that too. Wild fermentation makes you sound like a survivor, kind of.
Right?
It's really cool. Yeah.
But yeah, so you just do that, and then you leave it in that jar. I make sure to shake it or stir it every day. And the reason you do that is to disrupt the surface so that you don't get molds and things growing on it. And then once it kind of stops bubbling and whatever, then you just let it keep sitting. You can strain out the apples if you want. I'm very lazy most of the time, and I leave them in, just to make sure that they stay under the liquid so that they don't mold. And yeah, just let them keep sitting there, and then eventually you have vinegar. Like, it's really easy. You know, some people will, you know, if you want to get fancy, you can, like, transfer it to a different container and, like, you know, so it gets, you know, different air circulation going and, you know, whatever. There's all kinds of things you can do. Or you can just set it in a jar, shake it for, like, the first couple weeks, and then start checking it, you know, a little less often, every couple days or whatever, and then eventually you have vinegar. And that's usually what I do.
That's amazing. And so it really doesn't require any kind of specialty gadgets or supplies. It's literally like a jar. You could just use a jelly jar, basically, right?
Yeah.
Apple scraps and a little bit of sugar and water. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Can you do it also with other kinds of fruit? I'm just thinking of things like maybe pears. Would that work with like pear vinegar? Is that possible?
Yeah, it's, you know, so basically anything that has sugars that can be broken down. So I've made quince vinegar before. I've made strawberry vinegar before, with like strawberries that were starting to get mushy. You can make vinegar out of all kinds of stuff. And yeah, adding the sugar helps, but it'll add that flavor. It'll add some of the wild yeast from the skin of whatever you're using from the fruit or vegetable. Yeah, you can. I've made like jalapeno vinegar before.
Oh, yum.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff.
That's cool.
And it's like a good way use like the tops of peppers and stuff like that too, is to pack those in a jar and make like a savory jalapeno vinegar.
Very nice. Well, okay, going back to apple vinegar, one of the big uses of apple vinegar, or especially apple cider vinegar in herbalism, is to make this product known as fire cider. And I just had my first attempt at making one. I took what I had on hand. I had some ginger, I had some different spices. I like added star anise and black pepper and turmeric and garlic and chili peppers and all these things that you would think shouldn't go together, but do in this. Can you tell us a bit more about how to use apple vinegars to make fire cider?
Yeah, so fire cider is just, it's basically like a general health tonic. As you know, I usually, when I'm teaching people how to make it, I classify kind of three different areas of things that you're going to be pulling from. So there's roots, which is like, the ginger, turmeric, all that kind of stuff. And like, honestly, if you have powdered turmeric, like, of course, if you have like artisan fresh, roots of turmeric, that's wonderful. But like, we may not all have that in this moment or in general.
Yeah.
So like,
But we have a
really.
lot of weird stuff in our spice cabinet right now that you're
Yeah.
probably digging through.
Fair.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, those kind of things, onions, garlic, like really aromatic kind of stuff, like that. A lot of those have antimicrobial properties that are very helpful for, kind of just keeping your body ticking along well. And then they also have a lot of micronutrients. And same with, so it's roots and shoots and spice. And so shoots is, greens. Like, if you have some scallions, if you've got, I don't know, like I've put like kale stems in it before and like, that kind of stuff, but then also herbs. So herbs have really, really high proportions of micronutrients. And so rosemary and thyme or two and oregano are kind of the three common ones to put in there. But you can put whatever in there. I mean, the last batch I made, I went out and foraged for like chickweed and dead nettle and crammed that in there. So it's like really whatever you want. Like this is your playground to play around in. And then spices, like you talked about the star anise and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, like if you've got like a bunch of crap in your spice cabinet right now that you're like, what do I do with like, oh God, why do I have all of this? This is a great place to start,
That's
like
great.
exploring that.
Yeah. And you should really like refresh your spice cabinet once a year anyhow. So this is a great time to make use of those. So when we're out of isolation, you can get some fresh new herbs and spices in there. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's great to use, so I always recommend people use living vinegars. So that's just vinegar that has a mother in it that hasn't been pasteurized. A mother is just the microbial mass that grows on vinegar. It's funny because like, of course, this is antimicrobial, right? Like all of these ingredients. So you're like, why does it matter if I'm using living vinegar? And it's like, well, they're antimicrobial. They will kill off some of those beneficial microbes, but the ones they don't are good for your body too. So it's just kind of like helps add a little bit more oomph to it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what just fascinates me so much around the topic of fermentation and fermented foods, because I mean, my whole career is dedicated to trying to kill bacteria or disarm them, right? But at the same time, there are so many really important microbes that are essential for our health and that we can use to transform our foods. Maybe another simple transformation process we could talk about a little bit is just brine fermentation, which you covered in the class. And I don't know if you can share a little bit about some ways that you can just use the ingredient of salt to preserve our foods as well.
Yeah, so there's all kinds of different. You can brine ferment like just about anything. I have a lot of chili peppers, and so I've just been making hot sauce with them. And so that's a great place to start with this kind of fermentation. Is you pack them in a jar, you add some salt. You can add like a garlic clove or whatever. I put apples in mine yesterday, fill it with water to cover, shake it up, and make sure everything's under that brine, that salt water, and then just set it aside, check it every day, make sure that it's not moldy or getting weird, And then eventually you have hot peppers, that have been fermented, and you just take all of that. I mean, this is like peppers, like stem seeds and all, like you can just pack it right in there. And because all of that will soften as it ferments, and then you just dump it. Like I usually go for like 3 weeks or a month, but it's up to your taste. Like there's no wrong answer. And
Yeah.
dump it in a blender and blend it, and then you have homemade hot sauce. Like super, super easy. You can also make brine, and if you've got, so like broccoli stems, for example, are a thing that people don't necessarily always know what to do with, but they make really, really good pickles.
Really? I had no idea. Oh, wow.
So if you pack them in a jar, and then you make a brine, again, that's salt water. So you want a brine ratio of like 2 to 5% is where stuff will usually ferment well. And you just pour that brine right over there, and then let them sit out at room temperature. Make sure they stay under the brine. That's really important so that they don't get harmful microbes growing on them, like molds and things. And let them go. I
Yeah.
usually let them go a couple days, and then they're fine. Then they're like slightly soured and pickly, and you can add like pickling spices and stuff in there.
Yum. Yeah. We've been eating a lot of our dilly beans. I made a big batch a couple weeks ago of just green beans that we packed into some mason jars with garlic and different spices, and let those ferment for, I don't know, maybe about a week and a half, and then I threw them in the fridge, and the kids love snacking on them. They're just
Awesome.
little crunchy, green bean pickle things it's great for their health too, because it's basically a dose of probiotics with their snack, which is nice. Yeah. So we're entering into springtime. I know that you're also a forager. Do you have any kind of cool things you've got an eye out for right now as the spring comes?
So I have, my yard is actually a certified wildlife habitat, which my neighbors hate because it means it never gets mowed, but I love because it means it never gets mowed and I can eat all the stuff out of it.
That's awesome.
And so there's chickweed is coming up in abundance right now. Chickweed is super, super tasty. I know we keep like talking about apples all the time in this, but like it kind of tastes a little bit like apples to me. Like it's like this like really fresh springy green. It's really, really yummy, and really good for you. Dead nettle as well as stinging nettle, although obviously like wear gloves if you're handling stinging nettle, and make sure to cook it properly.
Yeah.
Cleavers is another one that's medicinally used really similarly to stinging nettle. What else am I?
I came across some really interesting uses of stinging nettle during my research in the Balkans. It's because it grows in disturbed sites all around these villages, and the way that they use it is they'll actually collect it when it's nice and fresh and young and green. And they'll use it basically like a spinach to make kind of veggie, like these stuffed, cheesy, spinachy veggie pies. They call birek or pita. And oh my God, it is delicious and just packed with iron and nutrients and a great resource. But of course, with all things foraging, you should only forage if you are, skilled in the ability to identify what you're actually foraging, that you know what you're looking for.
I'm
With
doing it just.
plants and mushrooms. Yeah.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. Well, what is your favorite thing to ferment in general?
Man, it's hard to pick just one thing because I love, all of the ferments. They're all my babies. I like doing creative stuff with food scraps, which is super handy right now. Just because it forces me to be creative and think about not throwing anything away, and like doing that, then I'm like, oh, now I have to find a way to use this. So like it's not so much like which fermentation process is my favorite? It's more just kind of like anything that gets me really creatively thinking about how to use my food and turn it into something else that's really flavorful.
Yeah, I love that idea. I think that's One of the things that I hope will come out of this isolation period is that people will start thinking a bit more carefully about food use and food waste. And just like you said, like, how do you get the most out of our ingredients? And are there ways to get added value, not just to toss the apple cores or the carrot tops, but to also, find ways to use those? I mean, I feel like these are the lessons that our grandparents would have used, in the past. And these are things in a lot of cases that people have forgotten how to do because we live in such a time of plenty and easy access to relatively cheap food. That a lot of these skills have been forgotten.
It's interesting. When I was building the online food waste class that I teach, it was really nice to build it because, one, we throw away a ton of food. There's like what is it? The statistic was like 40% of fruits and vegetables end up in the bin or something like that. It's a lot. But it's also, I mean, like less so now, which hopefully we can keep that trend going. But yeah, it was interesting because I built that largely because, as you said, these are things that our ancestors all knew how to do, like recent ancestors, like our grandparents, and then, on farther back, like this just incredible overabundance of food is a pretty recent thing. And so it's like helping people think through that, and it's been interesting, like framing it as like ancestral food has been easier for people to kind of get their heads around, because if I'm just like, don't waste food, they're like, but I have so much of it, why not? And like now they're kind of thinking about it more, so like it's really interesting to see us kind of go back to that, those older ways of being and cooking.
Well, I know that in addition to workshops, the in-person workshops that you lead throughout the year, you also have a really great online class. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and how people can look into that if they're interested in signing up to get some more detailed lessons on how to ferment at home?
So the online class, I've started calling everything preserving abundance because I like the idea of taking all of this abundant stuff that we have around us and, thinking about each item as being abundant, each food as being abundant, rather than just having a lot of food in general. So like this carrot offers me all of this abundance. Like it offers me, the interior of the carrot that's nice and sweet, and then these peels that are nice and hearty and can go into other things, and then the tops I can make pesto from, and da 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 da. And so that's kind of how people have historically thought about these foods. It's like each part of the food was its own useful product. And so I built this class around different, it's organized kind of thematically by different processes. And it has everything from like fermenting things to like drying and quick pickling. And I even have like home and craft stuff in there. So like using like onion skins to make dyes and stuff like that, which is pretty fun. And so I've got like all of these different things, but all of it is undergirded with this like kind of shifting mindset to think about how we have thought about food for most of human history, rather than it just being like, here's a list of recipes, because that's not really
It's
that
about,
engaging.
no, I think you're right. It's about shifting intentions and shifting the ways that we really engage with our food. And yeah, there's so many things that are built into that, from social justice to food access, food security, food sovereignty. There's a lot that goes into really being more thoughtful about the substances that nourish our bodies, and how to, get the most out of those.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, so the class, I built it to help with that mindset shift we're talking about, but I also built it to be pretty accessible as well. So I kept the price point pretty low on it, and then it's also self-paced. It's all online. It has like some videos and stuff, but it's mostly stuff that is pretty easily accessible from whatever device, recipes and stuff that you are like in images, so you can like print them out, or if you want to like expand them on an iPad or whatever, like trying to make it so it's really, really easy to use. And if people are interested in finding out more about it, it's on my website. It's root-kitchens.com slash PA. And that has more information about the class and what it covers. It has a little bit more about that mindset shift thing behind it. And then it also has, of course, the ordering form there as well.
Awesome. That's so great. Well, I think if there's ever a time to learn more, and we've got some good remote learning opportunities during isolation, it's definitely worth checking out. Well, thank you so much, Julia, for sharing your insight and wisdom around preserving abundance. I think there's a lot of lessons that all of us can put into place from this. So thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
If you'd like to learn more about how to implement some of the food preservation methods discussed on this episode, and also learn more about how to shift your mindset around food abundance, then you should definitely check out Julia's online course. Details are available on her website at rootkitchens.com/PA, and that's spelled rootkitchens.com/PA. And here's something else that's really cool. Foodie Pharmacology listeners can enter this code to get $5 off when they enroll. And it's spelled Foodie Farm, FOODIEPHARM. You can also follow Julia's work at Root Kitchens, that's at rootkitchens, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We've got a fabulous lineup of topics and shows for you this season, so be sure to mark your calendars because new episodes are going to be coming out every single Monday. Share the link to the show with your friends. We'd also love to build a broader audience. I'm Dr. Cassandra Quave, and you've been listening to Foodie Pharmacology, the science podcast for the food curious, recorded on Skype from home during the COVID-19 isolation period in Atlanta, Georgia. You can subscribe to the podcast on SoundCloud or on Apple Podcasts. If you like this show, please leave a rating on Apple Podcasts and help us spread the word. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.